Before the stroke of midnight, on November the 14th, 1948, Prince Charles Philip Arthur George officially became public property. While his 22-year-old mother, Princess Elizabeth, rested in her bedroom suite in Buckingham Palace, her newborn heir was brought to the vast gilded ballroom by the royal midwife, Sister Helen Rowe, a seasoned practitioner with the sharp features of a seabird. A vision from an earlier century, the midwife wore a dark uniform, white pinafore, white wimple, and white gloves. Under the 46-foot-high ceilings, juxtaposed with the monarch's massive throne, draped with red and gold embroidered velvet, the 7-pound-6-ounce infant was swaddled in white blankets and placed in a simple cot for viewing by the royal courtiers who served his grandfather, King George VI, and grandmother, Queen Elizabeth. "Just a plasticine head," observed Major Thomas Harvey, the Queen's private secretary. "Poor little chap. 2.5 hours after being born, he was being looked at by outsiders, but with great affection and goodwill." His parents would celebrate their first anniversary 6 days later. The dewy princess with a wide smile and hourglass figure, and her 27-year-old husband with perfectly chiselled features. The wedding of Prince Philip of Greece to his third cousin Elizabeth, the heiress presumptive to the British throne, had given what Winston Churchill called a flash of colour to bleak post-war London on November the 20th, 1947. After the end of World War II, the Labour Party had won control of Parliament in 1945, ousting Churchill and installing Clement Attlee, a socialist determined to create a welfare state. The royal nuptials had been a welcome distraction for Britons who had been suffering food rationing and fuel shortages. Now there was cause for celebration again, as crowds cheered and sang for hours outside the palace railing, shouting "Dad" and "Granddad," neither of whom appeared. Charles was hemmed in by high expectations and scrutiny from the start, unlike his mother, who had 10 relatively carefree years of childhood. Her parents, the Duke and Duchess of York, did undertake some official travel. But as the second son of King George V, Elizabeth's father benefited from the absence of pressure and the relentless drumbeat of duty and daily obligations that mark an heir's life. It was only when he took the throne in 1936, on the abdication of his older brother, King Edward VIII, that 10-year-old Princess Elizabeth assumed her position as next in line and began to feel the weight of her future responsibilities. On December the 15th, 1948, 4-week-old Charles was christened beneath the ornate dome of the music room at Buckingham Palace, surrounded by his family and 8 godparents, an impressive lineup that included the King, maternal great-grandmother Queen Mary, and paternal great-grandmother, the Dowager Marchioness of Milford Haven. He was known as His Royal Highness Prince Charles of Edinburgh. At age 3, on his mother's accession to the throne in 1952, he would become Prince Charles of the House of Windsor and acquire 6 of his 8 hereditary titles: the Duke of Cornwall, the Duke of Rothesay, the Earl of Carrick, the Baron of Renfrew, the Lord of the Isles, and the Prince and Great Steward of Scotland. With the exception of the Duke of Cornwall, which had its own income-producing trust fund, the others were centuries-old honorifics. Only the Duke of Cornwall would come with specific responsibilities. Befitting a future king, the Archbishop of Canterbury doused the little prince with water from the River Jordan that had been poured into the gold lily font designed by Prince Albert and used for all of his and Queen Victoria's children. Delighted with her firstborn, Elizabeth breastfed him for 2 months, until she contracted measles and was forced to stop. Yet she was often away from Charles in his infancy, spending as much time as she could with Philip, an officer in the Royal Navy who was posted to Malta in October 1949. She managed to celebrate her son's first birthday, but afterwards she was abroad and apart from her son for long intervals. In August 1950, Elizabeth gave birth to her second child, Princess Anne, and returned to Malta after Charles turned two in November 1950. By the middle of the following year, both Elizabeth and Philip were back in London to help the King, who had fallen seriously ill with lung cancer. The family of four lived in Clarence House, bordering on Green Park. The young princess was increasingly occupied with royal duties, and the pattern of Charles's childhood was set. When the prince hit bottom, after his separation from Diana in 1992, he unburdened himself about the miseries of his youth to Jonathan Dimbleby, who was writing an authorised biography. As a little boy, Charles was easily cowed by the forceful personality of his father, whose rebukes for a deficiency in behaviour or attitude easily drew tears. Philip was brusque and well-meaning but unimaginative. Friends who spoke with Charles's permission described the Duke's belittling and even bullying his son in a rough way. Charles was less harsh about his mother, but his opinion had a bitter edge. She was not indifferent so much as detached. On reading these descriptions, when the biography appeared, the Queen and Prince Philip were wounded, to say the least. Charles's siblings, Anne especially, sprang to their parents' defence. "The suggestion that Elizabeth wasn't caring just beggars belief," said Anne. "It was Charles's perception," said a senior adviser to the Queen at the time. "But the idea that the Queen was a bad parent is nonsense." "Philip is very good with children," said his cousin Patricia, the eldest daughter of Philip's uncle, Louis Dicky Mountbatten, the first Earl Mountbatten of Burma, and his alluring wife, Edwina. "It is quite untrue that he didn't care. He was trying to help Charles develop character in his life, knowing the life he was going to have to lead."